So let's go to the text, Genesis chapter 7, verses 10 to 13. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened, and the rain was on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Don't need to be too bright. You can start from Adam, you get up to Noah, and it's roughly 1600 years. Now remember this morning we told you that there's such a hidden discrimination about evidence here, because all the fossils are defined as having to be older than 10,000 years. And this is one reason. From Adam to the present is nowhere near 10,000 years. First time I ever read my Bible, I don't come from a church background, but the impression I got was Adam was not here a million years ago. Adam was not here 100,000 years ago. It only seems like thousands of years ago. And now that I've read it from cover to cover many times, I haven't changed my mind about that. But I do have to get you thinking. Remember I've mentioned several times that Jesus said, the greatest commandment is you love the Lord your God with your heart, your soul and your mind. There's a question. How old was Noah? No cheating. Don't get your iPhones out to look up your Bible on your iPhones. It's rather hard. I love interacting with audiences, but this makes it a little difficult to do this sort of impromptu stuff. But you know what's interesting? Most people will say 600. Some of the kids will say 900. Oh, some of them will say 2,000. Do you know what the answer is? It's not 600. You see, when you read Genesis, you have to first of all reach a conclusion about what sort of literature it is. It is not poetry. It is actually history. In fact, it's a diary. This chapter here, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month. Noah was 600 years, 2 months and 17 days old. Now, do you realise that tells you something about the nature of literature that you're reading? It's not poetry. You don't have that sort of precision in fairy stories. Come on, how tall was the three little pigs? Do you know? What colour was, you know, their eyes? What address was the house that they blew down? You know, you have none of those details in fairy stories. This is a diary in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month. And what's interesting about this is it just doesn't throw in those totally accurate figures once. You can keep reading the story of the flood up to chapter 10 and discover that when Noah got off the ark, he was 601, 2 months and 27 days old. He was on the ark for 1 year and 10 days. And then if you add up the number of months, you find out Noah had months the same length as ours, roughly 30 days. Don't be surprised, month is our modern word for the old word moonth. Once every moonth, the moon is back in the same place, roughly 30 days. That's where we get, oh, you didn't know that. It's interesting to watch people's faces, even when you can't hear how they react. Which means, by the way, that these are real years. Noah's diary, Noah's account, is about a person who really was 600 years old, according to the author here. Okay, and more details. And the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. You know, the first time I read that, it was obvious to me that this is not a little flood up the creek behind Babylon. This is a thing that covers the planet. All the highest hills under the whole heaven. You can't get away from it. If you say it's a little flood in the Middle East, then you are telling me the book can't be trusted. And all flesh died that moved on the earth, birds and cattle and beasts and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, and every man, all in whose nostrils was the breath of life, all that was on the dry land died. You know, we have a professor of geology in Australia that dislikes me intensely. He's had me banned from presenting technical papers on coal geology, which is what I used to lecture in. You know, this professor has very intelligent questions. I couldn't believe in Noah's flood. I couldn't believe in the ark. How could Noah fit two blue whales in an aquarium on the boat? By the way, there are many people who try to answer that. And Noah didn't even have to put blue whales because they weren't on the dry land. They were having a whale of a time in the flood. They didn't need to be rescued from water. So we're not talking about whales tonight. We're going to be talking about some of the interesting things to start with that I like digging up. Hey, do you recognize dinosaurs? Remember this morning we told you that the skeptics, the anti-Christians, the Bible haters love to use dinosaurs because then they can attack the Bible without being seen to attack the Bible. T-Rex died out 63.5 million years ago. And the kids already have started to disbelieve what the Bible says. Oh, on our Jurassic Ark, we have Dinosaur Cove, full of fossil dinosaurs and dinosaur imprints and all sorts of things for the kids to do. That's Estian on the right-hand side, by the way. That's my grandson on the left. He's what you call photo-shy. He's good-looking in his 20s, so any of you girls who are single, he's single too. See me privately later, we might be able to organise something. We have murals. There's our curator, Daryl. We are the only museum in Australia, in fact we're the only outdoor museum in Australia, as well as indoor museum, that has one of these horned dinosaurs on display. You say, what is it? Well, it's actually called Draco Rex. And when I saw it had been found, I said, we have to get this to help people understand words and how they fit together. Draco? Draco's in your New Testament. Draco's in the book of Revelation. Draco is translated dragon. Draco Rex. Rex is on coins, meaning king. Ah, Draco Rex, the king dragon. Oh, and just to show you what scientists read, when they found this dinosaur, they thought, it looks just like a dragon of old. And they called it Draco Rex Hogwartsia. Guess what scientists read? Hey, Hogwarts novels, Harry Potter. Isn't that amazing what's up there in the intellectual world? Ah, but nevertheless, they're quite right. This does look like a dragon. And don't be surprised, the man who invented the word dinosaur was sure they were the monsters God made. Not only that, he and his colleagues established the museum system throughout Canada and the whole British Empire because he set up the big one in London. And you know the trace of this attitude that God created all things? Next time you're down in Toronto, go into the ROM, look up, and in the big cupola above you, right at the top, the highest place, there's a Bible verse. These are his works. Dinosaurs, the monsters God made. But we talked about creation on Saturday night. We want to move on to Noah's flood, Genesis 6-8. You see, Genesis 1 and 2, God made a good world. Genesis 3, we blew it. Genesis 4 onwards is a tragic history of man's rebellion becoming so obnoxious, God sends a flood in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month. Question, what would the evidence be? Yes, beautiful mural, 3 metres by 2 metres. You see the dinosaurs on the right? Do you see the flood coming and engulfing it? Do you see the field trip on the left? That's actually a real field trip that me and my young colleague Joseph, who I'm training up to take over from me, he and I go out and we dig up dinosaurs. In fact, we make casts of them so the students can actually get up and touch them at Jurassic Ark. Well, there's a couple of volunteers helping us put up a new dinosaur cart. The students love touching these things. Have you noticed that? They really do. And most of them look, some of them see, and very few of them think. You notice something? Its neck is bent back. Its tail is bent up. And almost nobody says, wow, why is it like that? Because when my dog died, it went, it didn't end up like that. When Grandma died, she went, she didn't end up like that. You know what's interesting? You can prove this creature drowned for sure. How do you know that? We've still got reptiles. We've got reptiles with long necks, reptiles with long tails. And think about drowning. Because after all, if you're looking for evidence of Noah's flood, drowning has to be involved somewhere. Because after 40 days and 40 nights, all the creatures that had the breath of air in them had died. except for those that were on the ark. When you're having a flood and the whole world is covered with water, guess what's the most likely cause of you dying after heart attacks, that is? The answer is drowning. I don't know if you've ever observed creatures drown. It's not pleasant. But in the experiments they did to verify how these creatures drown, what you noticed was that the creature, the last thing it did was open its mouth wide, wanting to get air in. But of course, there's only water there, and when the water goes down, that is the last thing you do. But as your back muscles tension, if you've got a tail, it shoots up and over the top of you. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, this creature drowned. And so did these. I mean, there's one in Alberta on the top left. The one on the right, I took that picture in Germany when I was doing dinosaur research there. See the one on the bottom middle? That's Nigeria. Dinosaurs drown. Oh, there's one more thing. You see, you might not have seen a drowned body. I have. And what's interesting is, after you drown, your body dies and the muscles relax. So within 3 minutes, that body will relax. Unless it is not only drowned but buried in 3 minutes, it will totally lose that position. These creatures were not only drowned, they were buried rapidly. Buried in Alaska, buried in North America, Canada, buried in South America, buried all the way through to Australia and China, and I've been to every location there except the Chinese one. Just to check. Test all things. Only keep the things that are true, is what the scripture says. Can I encourage you, at the end of the night, you will get an opportunity to ask some questions. So store them away. I'm sort of throwing out a scattergun approach of bits of information dealing with the flood tonight, reminding you that, hey, you've travelled to Ken Ham's Museum down there in Kentucky, Ohio. Come further. See the Barrier Reef. See the Aussie Creation Museum. And if you can't, it's all on DVD up there. Our brand new series on dinosaurs. We touched on dinosaurs on Saturday night. We touched on them this morning. We did the fossil fauns. You'll find all of those topics on those Done for Family DVDs. And if you're really high tech, yes, you can get them as MP4s as well. Some people have asked me all about, you know, newsletters and all of that. We do have three types of newsletters. One's a summary of the latest scientific finds. The other one is, what are we doing in schools and colleges that need praying for? And the other is the electronic print version, where you get all the coloured print, pictures of what we have found. Okay. The Apostle Paul wrote a verse to young Timothy. I've summarised it. Beware of false science. It leads you astray. False science, the word in Greek is gnosis, means information. Watch out for any false information. False information about politics, fake news about the economy, stuff that will lead you astray. I don't think you need me to expand that. You know very well that if someone gives you the wrong directions, you don't end up in the right place. Our whole three nights or three programs have been about this challenge. Who is your authority, God's unchanging word or man's evolving theories? Now, you know, when I became a Christian, I changed all of my university studies so that I could actually become a general expert in the biology and geology and fossilology and everything else of this issue, because most people have no idea what the evidence for evolution actually is. You have noticed how education goes today, don't you? You study about 10 subjects in elementary school, you narrow it down to 6 or 7 in high school, you narrow it down to 4 or 5 in first year university. By the time you do your PhD, you are studying almost everything about almost nothing. You become a specialist. And you just assume that if he says evolution is true and she says evolution is true, then it must be true, because you know there's no evidence in your specialty. You know, in all of my time being involved in creation research, I've noticed several things. One is, the theories of evolution have come and gone. The age of the world has changed many times since I've been a student, but God's word still says exactly the same thing, whether it's about creation and judgment, the flood, or the cross. So, give you a look at some of the research that we do. Thank you to those of you who put checks in to support what we do, because much of it goes to cover our research costs. Nova Scotia, Canada, it's a long way from Australia. And praise the Lord, I get to see a lot of evidence, like these things. That's a polystrate tree. That's the first time I ever saw a vertical tree in Canada. It's a famous location. Charles Lyell, the founding father of modern geology, went there. And he began to convince people the world was too old for the Bible to be true. And most people thought, ah, he's doing it with the scientific evidence. Now the sad thing is, he never did use the scientific evidence. Now that the internet's available and you can access his private letters, you too can discover that his aim was, quote, unquote, to free science from Moses. Or didn't they tell you that in geology? I wish they'd have told me. It would have made the conflict ever so much easier to understand. Polystrate? Oh, it's only 7:30. It's too early for big words. Let's help you. Strata? Well, the scientists use Latin and Greek. It just keeps the words constant. Strata just means layer. Some of you have stratified title on multi-story buildings. Okay. Many layers? Polystrate. Oh, you see my colleague in the bottom right hand there? Some of these polystrate trees are huge. Nova Scotia? No roots, no branches, no grow there. That's obvious, isn't it? I mean, if you find trees standing upright, it's normally because they've got something holding them in the ground. But if you find them standing upright with no roots and no branches, then they grew somewhere else. And they got washed in here and buried before they fell over. But you see, we're starting in Canada, and the Bible says the evidence is everywhere. God has stamped his nature as creator and also as judge on the whole of creation. So obviously, you can't miss it unless you lie to yourself. Let's go to Tennessee, USA. Government geologist, now a member of Creation Research. We're in a coal mine. Do you see the vertical tree beside him? Son of a geologist who went to university not far from this coal mine. What's interesting is those two people have an interesting testimony to give. The first geologist, he and I went to Vanderbilt University because he accessed me to all of these trees. And I said, well, let's go and check how many of these the students could access. Vanderbilt, hey, you've heard of it. It's got a reputation. It's unbelievably wealthy. Vanderbilt University, one of the best libraries on the planet. We went and we accessed in their filing system polystrate fossil trees. Guess how many entries we discovered? Zero. Don't be surprised. The average person thinks you're making this up. No, it's deliberately not there. Oh, this man's dad, you know, he couldn't believe the Bible. I had to give a lecture to the Geological Association in Tennessee, and he came along. He'd heard there was this Australian geologist who was going to talk about rapid rocks. By the time we'd finished, he really began to doubt the millions of years. And then he and I were out, and we were up on the Cumberland Plateau, and we went through a little exercise about how long those rocks could have taken to get there because they're full of these fossil trees. Do you realise the amount of rock there had to get there before the tree fell over and before the tree rotted? That was it. That did it. And you know what he testified, and you can see it on some of our DVDs. He said, I went to university just down there. Not once did they ever bring a field trip to see any of this evidence at all. We see scientists as men in white coats telling the truth, as ladies committed to objective honesty. Sorry, science is any explanation, any naturalistic explanation without reference to God. Quote, unquote, Science Teachers Association Journal, November 2003. That's what science is in your schools, in my schools, in American schools. So don't be surprised. We caused a bit of a stir when we found this tree. Wow, there's me, up a ladder, up a cliff. Get up a bit close. Evidence of rapid burial? How good are your eyes? Can you spot the red arrow? Because what I noticed as I excavated this tree was the tree still has leaves on it. Okay. Hey, you live in Canada, and don't the trees sort of look dead half the year when the cold comes? How long do the leaves last? You see, if you're going to bury this tree really slowly as it stands in a swamp, the leaves are not going to be there, and the tree will rot. Oh, if you don't believe me, can I encourage you, when spring comes, go and stand in a swamp and see how long it takes you to get buried. And as you rot off at the ankles, I hope you've already written your will out, because you're not going to be preserved at all. And these trees are preserved beautifully. Yours truly, at another site. Coal. Coal's an old word. Some of you ladies know that you put coal on your eyebrows. K-O-H-L. That's where the word comes from. The Egyptian pharaohs put coal on their eyebrows. Coal is a word that means black. Isn't this simple? Except it gets so used by academics, you think they've got highly technical terms. Many-layered tree standing on top of black rock. That's what it means. And look at some of the fossils I've dug out of this area over the years. Isn't that beautiful? You say, how do you know it's a tassel fern? Well, I still grow them in my backyard. Remember I told you on Friday night that the fossils are no help to evolution? But they're also no help to any theory that says fossils took a long time to get there. Look how beautifully preserved they are. Look at this beautiful fern. Isn't that magnificent? Nah, look, ferns live. At the end of summer, they die. And by the time you get halfway through winter, they're gone. That is beautiful. Oh, look at this. Glorious. I mean, that's just delightful. Not only that, it had a colour of gold in it. Wow. You know, I took a homeschooling group on a field trip in the USA where I found this one year, and a lady split open a rock, and here was one of these ferns. And she just burst into tears. And I thought, oh no, what have we got going here? And she said, it's just so beautiful. And it is. And then she said something I've never forgotten. Oh, I'm the first person to see this since God saw it last. That's what a fossil is, by the way. You are the first person to see it since God saw it last. And it was covered up so quickly it had no time to rot. And if you tried to take a long time, it would not be there. Oh, just 2 weeks ago, I found this in the rocks. Not the coin. I'd be wealthy if I kept finding coins in rock. Can you see the footprints? Hey, look at that. Ever tried to preserve your footprints in the sand as you walk along the shore of a lake or a beach? Look, fossil footprints. The only way you can do this is two ways. Kids, you never heard this from me, but you probably know it's true already. Dad spends a lot of time as spring comes making new concrete paths. And then when he goes inside for his coffee break, you jump all in the concrete. And he's used rapid set concrete. And by the time he's come out, your footprints are preserved. Now, they won't last unless that footpath is covered up. Everybody else walking on them will wear them down. So you either cover these up, set the rock real quickly, bury them fast, or you get no footprints at all. Look, we've had a wonderful couple of weeks digging. People say, how come you find such good fossils? Do you know what? I believe what God says. If you lack anything, you know, you read in the book of James, ask. And whatever you ask, we read in John, that will I do, said Jesus, that the Father will be glorified. And I've had students ask me, how come you find the fossils? I say, well, this morning I got on my knees and I said, Lord Jesus, these are your rocks. Lead me to the ones that point to a rock that's higher than I. And he's good at it. Oh, look, and this same location. There's another one of those coins. And in this rock, I found some brachiopods. Brachiopods? They're seashells. That's what they are. Seashells, footprints, vertical trees, delightful ferns, and, wow, this was a find and a half. It's a horseshoe crab. Now, does anything strike you at the moment? You see, we started in Canada, and what we are doing is actually following the same layer from Nova Scotia all the way through Pennsylvania down into Tennessee, and I could keep going if I wanted to, but he told me I had to be out of here by 8:30. Right? So we'll probably stop a little bit after Tennessee. There's the coal seam. There's the layer I'm in, about, 10, 12 centimetres above the coal seam. There's the base of a fossil tree. These fossils I found, the ferns, the horseshoe crabs, the amphibian footprints, are all along that layer. There's the coal. Do you notice something? You're right at the base of the tree. How many roots can you see, please? You can't. There's no roots on this tree. It did not grow there. There's the layer where we found the footprints and the crabs and all of that. No roots. Upright tree fossils, land plants, seashells, sea animals. This is a flood deposit. No doubt about it. Oh, and look, Tennessee is full of these things. And remember the young geologist? He said, they never took us to see any of these things at all. Do you realize that the best lies are mostly the truth? It's the bit you left out that's the problem. I mean, an old Baptist preacher once told me that, the best lies are like rat poison. Rat poison is 98% good wholesome porridge. That's not the bit that kills you. It's the 2% you can't taste or see that really knocks you out. Okay, I said we'd stop at Tennessee. Let's sort of head back the other way. Pennsylvania? Oh, Pennsylvanian rocks. Hey, that doesn't mean millions of years any more than Jurassic means millions of years. Jurassic means like the rocks in the Jura Mountains, and the Pennsylvanian era refers to Pennsylvania. Oh, and the people in England and Canada call them Carboniferous. The Americans call them Pennsylvanian. Do you realize politics shows up even in geology? Why do you think the Americans want to call it their name? Answer, didn't they have a little squabble with the English a few centuries ago? Didn't they want to be independent? Didn't they want to spell colour the way they want to spell it? Yeah, they do. Okay, see the red line? I'll save you hours and hours of talk here because I've been from Newcastle down in Alabama all the way up through Tennessee, across through Kentucky, up through Pennsylvania, out through Nova Scotia, and my father's name was Mackay. I come from Scotland. So, I've been there just to see the relics and some of the fossil trees. Do you spot them? This is high tide. Hey, good eyes are a blessing in this sort of trade. When you have a look, tide goes out. Do you see the trees leaning over? We are still, by the way, in Carboniferous or Pennsylvanian rocks. It's easy to prove they've got chemical fingerprints that tell you this is the same rock. They've got the same fossils. And here's one leaning over. Oh, it's not the most famous one. This is the most famous one. My dad grew up in Leith, and this is from the old Leith Quarry. Now, you've got a tree, and it's at 45 degrees, and yet it hasn't managed to fall over. How do you do that? That's really interesting, isn't it? Because I tracked down this fossil, and here it is. It's now in the Botanic Gardens at Edinburgh. And they don't tell you anything at all about... Oh, can you see how many roots it's got, by the way? You see how many branches? It doesn't have either. Question, you're a humble tree standing there, no roots, no branches, you start to fall over, and you are buried before you reach the ground. Hey, these things are fast, but what sort of thing would do it? You see, we're still in the same bed when we go down to near Manchester. There's yours truly. If you're wondering how I manage to keep moderately healthy in my middle to old age, I do a lot of this sort of stuff. What am I looking for? That tree. Oh, where did I get that picture? That's off the back of an old geology guide. But this tree had been lost. We found it again. There it is, covered in moss. We cleaned it up. There's yours truly being photographed with it. Why would I bother going to find such a tree? Isn't there a verse in the Bible that says the trees of the field will clap their hands? Interesting. Clap their hands about who? Do you realize Jesus said as he walked into Jerusalem, if the people stop praising me, the stones will cry out. Can I be honest with you? When you've got the right ears, the stones never applaud Charles Darwin. They never give credit to the Canadian Broadcasting Commission for all of the lies they tell you about millions of years of slow rock formation. They actually clap Jesus Christ, Creator. Jesus Christ, His word was judge. Jesus Christ who invented weather and Jesus Christ who actually authorized the flood in judgment, but only after he'd authorized an ark of salvation for anybody who would believe. Why this tree? Well, a very brave professor, quite a long time ago, he made an interesting argument. He said, if you look at this tree, there's 30,000 layers of sediment up this tree. 30,000? Hey, that's a long, slow burial in a swamp. But he said, it can't be a swamp. This layer's got land plants, that's got seashells, land plants again, seaweed, seashells, plants, ferns. He said, if we're going to believe this tree stood there while all that happened, then the ocean has to rise up and flood it. Then the land has to sink down to get the land plant up again, down again, up again. And he said, there's no cracks anywhere. This didn't happen at all. This tree was apparently overwhelmed by flooding. Hey, he said this was a flood deposit. I love it when the professors do that. He can't find any other explanation that works. In fact, there's another professor who I really admire. Sadly, he's gone to his judgment now. He wrote a book, a professor at Swansea University, and he wrote a book called The New Catastrophism. And he actually really said the old geologists were more observant and reliable than the new geologists because they just wrote down what was there. New catastrophism? That's because the first geologists had a catastrophic view of history. Creation? Wow, it was done in 6 days. None of this millions of years business. Noah's flood, wow, was all over and done with in 1 year and 10 days. Catastrophically quickly. Okay. He, like me, and like very few other geologists, has travelled and got to see, hey, if I'm going to study the rocks in England, what are they related to in America? How about South America? Can I travel and see them all? Here's what he says. The Carboniferous, otherwise known as the Pennsylvania in the USA, extends from Texas to Russia in essentially the same form. You know, some of these beds are so easy to recognise. There's one series called the Old Red Beds, and you know it's the same bed from Texas all the way through because underneath it is a layer of green muck from one end to the other. Absolutely identical. Wow. And he says this amounts to some 170 degrees of longitude. Even when you close the Atlantic up, if you want to do something like that, it doesn't really help. His problem? How do you claim this was a swamp filling up slowly when it occupies half the planet? And he said, we've got no explanation. Oh, you know what he said? In the introduction he said, creationists are not allowed to use this book. Hey, why not? Well, that's because we know a better explanation than he does. If you've got trees standing upright without roots over half the planet and they were buried before they fell over, do you realise you've got a flood deposit in England and you've got a flood deposit in Russia, you've got a flood deposit in Tennessee, in Pennsylvania, right down through Alabama? That is some floods. Perhaps it's not floods multiple, perhaps it's one flood. You know, when I first studied geology at Queensland University, in the first week, my professor said, we're not going to study any such catastrophic rubbish as Noah's flood. I didn't come from a church family. I wanted to know, what's going on? Why aren't I allowed to ask questions here? What's wrong with this? And you know what the effect it had on me? Wet paint, don't touch. We do, don't we? It backfired. You know what's even more remarkable? When you have a look at the whole of this, you now know we have this deposit in Australia as well, with the same vertical trees. And I've been there to see it. You know, open your eyes that we might see, that old song goes. That's my encouragement to you tonight. When you look at the rocks, they don't talk about millions of years of evolution. They don't even talk about millions of years. If you've got to bury a tree before it falls over, then you don't have very long at all. That's why I said the whole issue here is who is your authority. No, I don't know everything, and I never will. Neither will you. Neither does David Suzuki nor anybody in scientific endeavor at all, which means you all make presuppositions or assumptions. You actually assume things that you need to in order to reach a conclusion, which means that science is a faith-based exercise. You know, I had a debate a little while ago, and the head of the geology department said, well, you Christians, you just believe things by faith. We scientists, we go by the evidence. And I thought, you cheeky little liar, you need to be cut in two. So let me politely cut you in two. Question, if you're going to be a scientist, do you realise there are certain things you have to believe in order to even start? I'll name them for you. You have to believe the world is actually real. You say, that's stupid. No, come with me to India. I've been to India. I'll introduce you to a man sitting on the ground, covered in ash, filthy. And he's going, He's trying to escape to reality because this is an illusion. Yeah. That's why science never came out of India. They don't have that basic presupposition. Do you know what else you have to believe? You have to believe that the world is real and that you are rational. You know, I had a psychology student come to me and he said, you Christians just believe. And it was very evident from his content that he was studying psychology at university. I said, are you a psychology student? Yes. I said, well, here's a test for you. I want you to go to your professor next week and I want you to ask him, does he actually believe he's here? Hey, you've never done that? Oh, he said, I know the answer to that. My professor's not sure if he's actually there at all. I said, well, you're a psychology student. Are you sure you're here? He said, well, I couldn't prove it. I said, when you can, come back and we'll talk. Because you see, in order to be a scientist, you have to believe the world is real, you have to believe that the world is real and you're real and rational. And you have to believe a third thing. For every real and rational question, there's a real and rational answer. And if you don't believe those three things by faith, you will never be a scientist. It's true. Oh, where did we get those beliefs from? 1601, Francis Bacon wrote a book. 1604 is published. You know it as a scientific method. You know how he introduces that? There are two books laid before us to stop us falling into error. First is the Holy Scriptures, which reveals the will of God. Second is the creation, which declares his power. You know why you believe I'm rational? Because I'm made in the image of God, who is rational. Do you know why we believe the world is actually here? Because God made the world discrete. It's a separate thing. It's not him. He's not the world. He made it. It actually exists until he says, disappear. Yeah, it's held by the power of his word. And do you know why you believe for every rational question there's a real and rational answer? Because God is a God of law and order. I mean, Isaac Newton, the law of gravity. He didn't discover the law of gravity. The first person who fell down the steps discovered the law of gravity. Right? What Isaac Newton did, there's a God who invented all the laws. And he says, study to show yourself approved. It's got to be there. So if I run a test today and I get the same results as I got yesterday, there's a law because the universe reflects a God who is law and order. Okay, let's finish off tonight. We started with Noah. He built an ark for the saving of any who would, through faith, believe. And Peter is well qualified to talk about Noah's flood because he's the only person you know and I know who actually tried to walk on water. Agree? He's a fisherman. And he's used by God to write this. In the last days, there will come scoffers walking after their own lusts. Now, some of you have seen me versus Richard Dawkins on YouTube or whatever. He never discusses evidence. He just pokes fun at John Mackay. He never talks about the proof of something. He just belittles anybody who believes creation. Scoffers, walking after their own lust and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. For this they willingly are ignorant of. What are they ignorant of? What are they deliberately ignoring? That by the word of God, the heavens revolved and the earth standing out of water and in the water, whereby the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished. You know, I had to give a lecture to the Geological Association in Oxford in England. My biggest opponent that night was a professor. You know, he belittled everything that I said. But afterwards he came and he said, "Would you come and have a drink with me in the bar?" So he had his scotch and whiskey on the rocks and I had my Coca-Cola and we discussed things. And he said, "I've got to admire you, you're very brave." I said, "Why?" He said, "Very few people would stand up at the Geological Association and admit to believing Noah's flood." I said, "Well, that's what I have to do. That's what I've got to tell you the truth." And he said, "You know all that evidence you discussed?" I said, "Yes." He said, "I've actually seen that." "You dirty wretch. You spent your entire night denying everything I was saying, and yet here you are telling me you've actually seen it." Don't be surprised. He's mentioned in 2 Peter chapter 3. In the last days, they'll willingly ignore. "But the heavens and the earth, which are now by the same word kept in store, reserved under fire against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men." You see, Peter's not just telling you a little bit of history. He's saying the same God, the same judge, the same judgment will be happening again, but not by water this time, but by fire. And just as Jesus instructed Noah to build an ark, so he himself personally became the ark that anybody can take advantage of his free offer of salvation, and he will get you through the judgment. Not the judgment of water, that's done, but the judgment by fire. Are you ready to ask some questions in a moment? Because we're nearly there. I would encourage you, if you've enjoyed what we've been doing, go to creationresearch.net, click on Q&A, insert Polystrate. Oh, and some latest updates. We have museums now in Canada, Tasmania, Queensland, Australia, and in the United Kingdom. But the one that interests you is the one we started up in Ontario, so you need to know it. There's a brochure up the back that you can pick up about this museum. If you want to support it, it needs it. See our curator there, Martin. Now, Martin's not a preacher. Martin's a brilliant fossil finder, organiser, and leader of field trips. So impressive is his museum. See the professor on the right? He's from a university, and he said, "Would you bring your museum to our university?" So he did. Do you realise a creation-based museum which talks about different genuses is actually closer to the foundation of science than the modern evolutionist ones who says, "Oh, this is what a jellyfish looked like 500 million years ago. And it evolved," when there isn't the slightest evidence of that. So it's in Goodwood, Ontario, just outside of Toronto. Pray for Martin. Pray for the project. No, I don't think we'll ever see a $100 million copy of Noah's Ark in Canada, particularly if it doesn't float. You'll find I don't think the money's available up here. But you can come on our field trips. Martin does a great job through Canada. And look at some of the fossils you find here in Canada. Beautifully preserved three-dimensional fossils with their eyeballs still intact. You can pull those eyes out and actually see through them. Amazing. Because they were buried quickly. There's no time preserved in the rocks. There's a process. That creature was wandering along, minding its own business, and kathunk. Yeah, flood-type deposition. Again, I'd remind you, sign up if you want to support what Martin's doing. You want to know when our field trips are. Fill in the form, give it back. Have a look at the DVDs up there. We have to pack them up. We're heading off to a Bible college tomorrow morning to do a session with them and a session tomorrow night. I'd encourage you either pick them up as hard copies or you can get them as MP4s. Okay, I'm going to grab a mouthful. Well, I would if I had one. If we can have a loan of some water. Over this side? Over this side. Very good. Okay, microphone please, and we'll take 10 minutes of questions, and then we'll finish the meeting off.
Okay, anybody have a question? Going once? Okay. Thank you for your presentation. This afternoon, I read a story or an article on the internet about they found the oldest settlement in North America, apparently, just north of Vancouver on an island. They said that they found some bits of carbon and some pottery that they tested, and it was 15,000 years old. What do you say to somebody?
How many years old was it supposed to be?
Sorry?
How many years old?
15,000.
15,000. That's a very convenient date for them to pick, because it's one that they theoretically should be able to date using carbon-14. But they themselves know that if you study all the trees in North America, there's a big gap in the tree record here in North America on which carbon 14 is based. Right? So I'm assuming they're using carbon 14. But basically, when I went up there checking things, the original sort of carbon 14 scheme, if you have a clock, let's imagine you invent a new clock, the first thing you have to know is what time is it, right? Because otherwise the clock's useless. And the second thing you have to do is compare it against something historical so you know how fast your clock goes so you can actually calibrate it. When it comes to carbon 14, how do you know how fast it's going? Where is the clock set to? So what they do is try and tie it to tree rings. You know, supposedly each tree has one ring per, or you know, two rings per season, thick one, thin one, etc. There's the first place carbon 14 calibration goes wrong. Because if you go to the extreme Arctic, or you go to the extreme high seasons, up in the deserts of California, where you have droughts and that, when you come to Australia, here's what you notice. The number of rings in a tree does not represent its age. It represents the opportunities it had to grow. So in the Northern Territory, sometimes we'll have five wet seasons in a year. We have five sets of rings. Sometimes we have no water for 5 years. We have no rings. Right? So what you'll find is the assumption is what's in error. When you have a look at the trees way up in the mountains in California where basalt has poured over the plateau and surprisingly the tree is still growing through it, you find you end up with not only the wrong number of rings because volcanic eruptions interfere with tree growth. You know, some of you are old enough to remember when Mount St. Helens blew up. One of the guys who was one of our friends was the guy who owned all the forests around Mount St. Helens. And he reported to me, he said, John, he said, our trees have not grown for 5 years because the dust has settled on all of their leaves. They're not dying, but neither are they growing. So for the last 5 years, we've had no tree rings at all. So there's the first fallacy. Second, you will find that when you look at the stories of pottery and all of that, most of the stories have one presupposition. A, the fossils have to be older than 10,000 years. B, you cannot take the biblical account as a reliable framework of history. And C, don't even bother asking the natives about how they got there. Their opinions are irrelevant because we're scientists. Right, so what you'll find is that when you look at the traditional stories of the natives here, and on one of our DVDs, which you can download as an MP4 called Real Roots and Origin of Races, we interviewed the Dakota Sioux here in Saskatchewan, right? They were really mad at the Americans who said, we came from Asia, walked across the Bering Sea, came down the west coast and came back up. He said, no, we came from over the sea towards the sunrise after the big flood. Right? And I got the same story from the natives in Nova Scotia. And what you find is there are natives who did come from Asia, walk across the Bering Sea and come down, and then you will discover one interesting thing. Asia, Chinese, right? You discover they come down here, they brought high technology with them. Because when you got to this place here in the middle of the plains, have you noticed that most of the natives weren't using pottery? Most people haven't, but they weren't. They were using bows and arrows and tents and teepees. Okay, you start, and I spent time with one archaeologist, you start in the northern part of that peninsula and come down and you start out with pottery culture and all that, and as you go down, it descends into Stone Age. It descends. They are more high-tech in lower down than they are when the Europeans got here. The technology went downhill. So they come from Asia, undeniably on that side. They use pottery, they bought it with them, but they lost the skill by the time they get to the middle of the country and you have a bow and arrow type technology and sometimes even more primitive than that. So that's what you find. I would challenge the date. I'd have to read the article to see exactly what they've done, but they usually tend to ignore everything the local natives themselves say about their real history. When you have a look at most American native groups, they have a story about coming here after the big flood, and yet it's totally ignored. Okay, good question. Anybody else?
Our son has been studying distant starlight and time.
Yes.
And we wondered how you explain that area.
Okay. Thank you for asking that question. I can vividly see your creation research t-shirt there. We actually designed those Stop Following Me t-shirts to fund the costs of the young university student we're training in England to give him 10 weeks of experience preaching and teaching and researching in Australia. So thank you for helping that. And the rest of you, get your t-shirts before we leave here tonight in an hour's time or so. They'll be up there. They're great witnessing tools. The question was about starlight and time. I had it asked a lot more impolitely of me by a professor of physics in Manchester, and they said, there's no way you can be right. Big Bang, millions of years of starlight taking from the furthest stars to get here. And I said, excuse me, Madam Professor, do you realise it's not the evidence we're arguing about here? And I said, you've got a Big Bang theory that says matter started as a totally compressed blob of everything in one spot and then it exploded. Yes, that's right. Okay. I said, you weren't there, I wasn't there. And it contradicts everything you read in the biblical account, which says God said, let there be light. And there was light. And the light was there before the sun and the moon and the stars. So you start with dark matter that somehow explodes and light comes from there. And the Bible says, no, God made the world. It was dark, but he spoke the light into existence. All right, let me start to pull apart the biggest problem with the concept that says an explosion occurred, then the universe has been expanding outwards, and there's light out here 10 billion light years away, coming from a star, and if we can see that star, the universe must be at least 10 billion years old. All right. We've got a big satellite thing up there at the moment, and we've got now brilliant photographs and measurements. There's a measurement called the visually observable universe. Now, when you get out there and take a picture and you calculate how much you've seen, at the moment, it's roughly 50 billion light years across. And you come back to Earth and they teach you the universe is 13.6 billion years old, because that's when the Big Bang occurred. So therefore, we have an interesting situation. You start in a point and you have an explosion, and, well, Einstein says the fastest speed anything goes is the speed of light. So if you are moving outwards for 13.6 billion years, the size of your universe should be 27.4 billion years across. Trouble is it isn't. It's 50 billion light years across. Now, immediately, you have a dilemma. Okay, if the universe is 50 billion years across and your galaxy is supposed to only be 27 billion years across, then you have to say, once upon a time, light was going faster. And that's where they've gotten to. They don't know what to do with it, but if you have a real universe that's that big, and when it should be that big, then there had to be a time when something was going faster than the speed of light, including light itself. Now, the minute you say that, the whole Big Bang theory falls to pieces, because it's based on the speed of light never being faster. Now, I personally don't like Barry Humphrey's explanation of starlight and time. I think we are better off looking at this concept that light is not a fixed speed at all. And I say that because, ever since sin came onto the planet, have you realised that everything's been going downhill? You're getting slower. I'm getting slower. Why not light? Why does light have to stay the same speed? I'll tell you. Because Einstein, as an agnostic, had got rid of the S-O-N of God and concentrated on the S-U-N of God. Yeah. He had to hang his hat on somewhere. And I do give you a warning, you younger people, that Einstein's career has probably reached its ultimate. He's dead now, of course. But you'll find challenges, 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 particularly because of this. You see, I know that people say the speed of light is the fastest you can go. It's not possible to go faster. But the young men who make computers couldn't care less what the rules are, because they know that if I can speed up the electrons, if I can speed up light faster than what it's supposed to, I can make this work quicker and I can be rich.